welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the show this week. My guest is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We have a pre-recorded show for you this week, so unfortunately we cannot take your phone calls, but you can always send emailed questions for any of our four mayors at any point to ask@WBAA.org. You can also tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Good afternoon. Good to see you as always.
Thanks, Stan. Good to be here.
Seems to me that the last time we talked was also a pre-recorded show because there was a nice event in your life, your daughter getting married, yeah. A nice event, I hope.
Yes, it all worked out. Well, rained a little bit that day, but we got through it and bought umbrellas, and it ended up being a great day. And I've heard that that's supposed to be good luck when it rains on your wedding day, so let's hope that it is.
I have heard that as well, and you know, it strikes me that if you get the rain out of the way at the beginning, then maybe you've got a little bit of like brownie points built up on the karma side.
There you go.
Don't have stuff to deal with later on.
And it worked out. It didn't pour, so it was kind of just sprinkling. So we got everybody in and out of the church, and it worked out just fine.
As long as you like your son-in-law, that's okay.
I do.
Okay,
he's a hard worker. He's a good guy.
Excellent. Good to hear. Well, let's get right to questions that have come in. Let's start with one from Candace, one of our listeners, who says, the next time Mayor Rozworski's on the show, please ask him about the walkway project behind the old National Retail residential complex. You and I have referred to this as the promenade on this show. She says that part of the project has remained chained off and unfinished for at least 5 years. She says downtown's looking great with all the sidewalk improvements and refurbishing, but this remains an eyesore. It also seemed to provide a ramp, she says, matching the one on the other side of the tracks to facilitate access for the disabled or for strollers, which are forced to use the elevator to get up and down now. She wants to know, is this a city property or part of the complex, which she says also she thinks took a disproportionately long time to complete versus other major projects around town?
Well, to answer all the parts of the question, the promenade, and I don't think it's been quite 5 years, but the promenade is a project of the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation, a 501c3 not-for-profit that's charged with developing the riverfront here, really in a four-county region. Myself, Mayor Dennis, and Commissioner Murtaugh, we serve on the board, and we're the executive officers of that. So that's kind of outside our normal duties, but we do run that organization. So the promenade was built in conjunction with the MARC, trying to create economies of scale, trying to use the same contractors, things like that, thinking it would be a little bit easier. Well, that didn't really work out quite the way that everybody thought. The MARC did have some delays at the beginning. I wouldn't say took way longer than a lot of projects, but they did hit water much at a shallower depth than they thought they would, and there was a lot of dewatering that had to take place so they could dig down far enough to actually put in the footers and the foundation and the pylons to hold the building. So there was a few things like that that happened at the building, and it was a significant dewatering process. And then a little bit of struggle getting some of the you giant utilities moved because they were for their building. They tied into Reilly Plaza. They tied into downtown. So there had to be a significant amount of that. But to ask a question, so the promenade is continuing. I believe REC will have that completed by the end of this construction season. That's certainly our goal. We have two challenges that we're still working to get over right now, and that's the connection at the Columbia Street Bridge, and we have a solution for that. We're waiting for the steel to be fabricated to make that tie in just the way we want it, and so people are comfortable with it. And then we're working on some drainage and a retaining wall issue, and once we get the methodology to correct that, it'll move along pretty quick. And yes, there is a ramp that's part of that. So if you don't want to use the elevators, the city of Lafayette, not REC, we built a ramp on the west side of the railroad bridge that ties into the Myers Bridge. And then when you come up, REC is building a ramp that you can get on that will wind down and then into the new steps, then that's the City of Lafayette project that will cross the steps. And then we built a ramp on the Lafayette side of Reilly Plaza to finish off. So there will be a ramping system when it's done. And I think so if people don't want to use the elevators, or if the elevators happen to be out of service, For some reason, there'll always be a way for people to do that, for strollers, handicap bikes, just the things that the caller suggested. So
a little bit of engineering work still to be done, it sounds like,
yes,
before the end of this calendar year.
Yeah, that is my goal, that the engineering and the construction would all be done by the end of this calendar year.
Okay. Reminder, you can send your questions to ask@wbaa.org. This is a pre-recorded Ask the Mayor with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski today. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us. You can also tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Let's talk about another construction project that you and I talked about a couple of months ago, which was the resurfacing of Beck Lane. The city's Board of Works took a somewhat rare step of turning down the initial bids for that. They came in something like 140% of what you had budgeted for that project. The city subsequently reopened that bidding process, and it was really interesting to me because the second time around, the eventual winning bidder, Reith Riley, who had submitted a bid the first time for something like $980,000, now came back not only about a third lower than their original bid, but about $18,000 to $20,000 under what the engineering estimate had originally been from the city, which you had said a couple months ago you were a little worried about whether you could actually meet that cost or have to go, you know, in that buffer zone of 110% of what you originally budgeted. So how did all that happen? How did that number come so far down for the accepted bid?
Well, the reason, because it's a modified work scope. So if you look at, there was alternate ones, alternate twos, and there were separate bids. So originally the bid was one giant package for all the road repaving, all the sidewalk work, all the curb work, all the driveway approach work. So that was taken out or as done as alternate. So what you saw there is really just to do the road piece of that, and that doesn't include the sidewalk and some of the other work that was in that original bid package. And then we will have to bid some of that out again separately when things slow down enough that maybe we can get some additional bidders to do the actual concrete part of that work too. But the road really needs to get done, and so what we're doing is we're cutting that work up into different bidding packages, and we're accepting part of it and we're not accepting part of it, so we can at least get some of it done. And then we'll have to continue to rebid other smaller parts that maybe some smaller firms, if the road's all done, they could handle the sidewalks or they could handle the drive approaches and some of those things, and we maybe help us get more bidders. So that's a modified bid package that doesn't actually have all of the work in it that we had bid the first time.
And so it sounds like Reith Riley's rate is still going to be approximately the same, but you only have a certain amount of money that you're able to allocate to this project. And so is the city a little bit at the mercy of their rate and what you were talking about in terms of construction companies just being busy and the state, as we know, having a lack of qualified workers to do all the projects that are available?
Right. And so we're even putting, and I don't know if I mentioned this on the last show, you know, we're even giving some of the companies longer to complete, like, you know, some of the stuff we're looking at now, tell them that I have to have it completed till May or June of 2020. To try to give them time to schedule the work in a way that might reduce how much that bid is, knowing, well, we probably won't have to pay overtime. It's not quite so worried about the weather because we have this big window. So we're trying some different things.
But you bring up something that's important, which is we here have seasons, unlike, say, Florida, where you've
right.
got potentially a long, maybe year-round construction season, but there are only so many months of the year that construction
that can,
is feasible
that you
here.
Can work. And so if you're going to butt up against one of those deadlines, or you think you might, then, you know, that bid's going to have overtime in it and everything else to try to get that work done before the bad weather gets here. And we had a little bit of success. There was some smaller bids on some smaller projects this morning. One of them was on 18th Street to repair a sidewalk and a wall along the bridge. There was one for the Underwood Street sidewalk and curb replacement, no road work, just quite, and that actually came in very good, and we've had a couple of those. We actually got three bidders on those, but again, they're small enough that you don't have to be the size of a Reith Riley or a Milestone to bid those. And so we're really trying to break things up into what we think is manageable segments and manageable time frames, because we do only have so much money. So Beck Lane, I mean, we'll get part what we can do this year, and then we'll have to do more next year. That's just the reality of it.
Is this the new normal, do you think, at least for a little while, where you're going to have to either change the scope of something in terms of how long it takes or how much you can do for the available money, or you're going to have to do it one piece at a time, you know, street first, then sidewalks, then your driveways, something like that? Is this going to change the way, at least in the short term, cities like yours operate on big projects like this, 6- and 7-figure projects?
Yeah, I mean, I think it will, and it has. I don't know exactly, as you correctly point out, exactly what that window is. I mean, you don't hope that the economy will slow down, right? But probably with the natural cycles that you see, it will slow down at some point. And, you know, the availability of labor and resources will be a little greater. That will help it to get a little more competitive. And then also, I think, you know, there is a lot of work being done with the labor and trades and stuff to recruit younger people into those skill sets. And so they can help build up those workforces so they have the folks to get those done. But yes, for the foreseeable future right now, we're going to be scrutinizing very closely how we're bidding, how we break it up, and see if we can, you know, get things done. But yes, and things may have to be done in phases more than they were in the past to make sure that we don't overspend and we get the project done. But it may be a 2-year project as opposed to a 1-year project.
Well, it strikes me it's also an interesting time to be opening a facility across the street from Jefferson High School that's going to focus more on trade-type education. Do you have the ability, as the mayor of a good-sized municipality, to go to the school corporation, to Superintendent Huddle, and say, hey, you know, we're seeing that we're unable to find all of the workmen and workwomen in this particular industry. Is there any way that you could take this new building that's being retrofitted to give 21st century education to students who are interested in going into trades a little bit of a push in that direction, because we think it's going to help not just our municipality, but indeed others who I'm sure you're competing with for time on the calendars of the Reith Rileys and the Milestones of the world?
Yeah, and that's really where this Career Academy was born, from those types of discussions several years ago, when we looked at not only the trades, but we looked at, you know, well, these are trades, but machinists and tool and die makers for Caterpillar and Subaru and logistics people, but then also people that are plumbers and electricians. And that's where that whole discussion started, with the school corporation, between the city, the school corporation, and businesses in our community, which led them to, part of the reason to acquire that building. And then a group of people, and I don't know the exact number, 25 or 30 people, were put on a committee, and Dennis Carson from my office participated, people from Greater Lafayette Commerce, the school corporation, lots of business and industry had reps, and they met for months and months and months as this big group to talk about how that building should be designed, what classes should be there. And that's why there's a phase one and a phase two. We've got to raise some more money. But that was a collaborative effort between government, the school corporation, and private business to get that Career Academy up and running, and what opportunities and classes and training and curriculum and all those things are going to be offered. There was a community-wide effort.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA, talking today with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We are pre-recorded this week, so we cannot take your phone calls, but you can always send us an email. ask@wbaa.org is our email address. You've got a couple other projects that are going on with your water and your sewer systems, and I'm noticing a number of these around the city, and I can't be the only one who's wondering what the timeline is on these. Where do we stand in terms of what seems to be a several-year effort to work on things like combined sewer overflow, which a lot of cities are being mandated to do? People will remember all of the work you did on Main Street a couple of years ago. What's the current state, if you take a 30,000-foot view, mm-hmm. of water and sewer in Greater Lafayette, specifically on your side of the river? Are you in the middle of something? Are you in the middle of replacing or building new? How would you characterize where you are in that process?
Okay. I'll kind of break that down into three different groups.
Sure.
So when you talk about combined sewer overflow and CSOs, as you said, our community, like many, are mandated to do that. We are, that's a 20, and I'd have to pull up the decree, which is huge. There was, I think, about 22 years of construction and 3 years of monitoring to ensure that everything we did met the decree. So as you know, we built the giant tunnel underneath downtown. That was one of our first major projects. We've added to it. It's like 3,200 feet long now, which is a conveyance tunnel that stops raw sewage from flowing into the river and gathers stormwater. We built the Pearl River lift station that attaches to that. Then we did the Earl Avenue Durkee's Run project, which is almost 7 miles in length, which took about 1,000 acres off the combined sewer. We've done smaller projects. Then we just recently are almost completed with the $25 million underground 5 million gallon storage facility down off Canal Road. We're getting ready to start the William Street sewer project, which is also part of the CSO. So I would say from a CSO standpoint, and I apologize for the length of that answer, we're past the halfway point in probably those projects, and you add the monitoring, maybe not quite halfway when you add the 3 years of monitoring, but when you add construction projects, we're past halfway. And then, other things kind of happen along the way. So as we were talking kind of before the show started, we're putting in that lift station at 9th and South. That was not part of the original CSO program. But as downtown developed, when it became possible to get that to help with some other flooding issues in the area, and with the work we did on Valley Street, which is, again, another CSO project, stormwater project, that made sense for two reasons. One, by putting a lift station there and some storage, we can save some money downstream on how big we need to build the next giant underground storage tank we have to build that's part of the plan.
Downstream, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, right, yeah. And so we can save some money on that size and solve some problems up here and open up an additional area for development. As you probably saw, we've discussed, we're in the design phase of moving part of the Pearl River sewer system underneath downtown. Instead of cutting across a couple lots, we're going to take it down some streets, and apologize, your viewers can't see my hand motions, to open up a couple lots downtown that aren't developable now because it runs right through them and you can't build on top of it or close to it. And so and that's a project that's we hadn't really thought about before, but there's so much interest in downtown now, it's viable to go ahead and move that and make a couple more lots available. So the upgrades to this wastewater treatment plant we did because we were looking to the future to add capacity for 25 and 30 years in the future. So, it'll never stop. There will always be things that will come up. But the CSO part kind of does have, it has a definitive number of projects that have to be done in a certain time frame also.
But it sounds like you've also been adding to that beyond the minimum of what's required.
Yeah, this morning we approved the contract for $4 million to run the first set of water and sewer lines from the city limits there on the north end of town out towards the Hoosier Heartland. So we're going to get out to about 65 in that area right in there, and that's the beginning of running utilities out to that corridor. So if things want to develop along the Hoosier Heartland, they'll be able to do that. It's a long process. Many years ago, we bought 13 acres, the city did, out by the old Aritz Airport out there. That's where the water well field will go in the future that will be able to pump 6 to 7 million gallons a day that would be able to serve that corridor up there. And so, we're just always looking to the future and doing things. We're replacing water lines right now, and we're about 70% design on the new booster station.
So as you're doing all of these things, I think people will remember, for instance, 10 years ago when all of the new property tax restrictions went in and all of the municipal budgets across the state suddenly shrank in a worrying way that I heard every mayor I talked to, regardless of their political stripe, go, well, our new reel just changed pretty dramatically. Now, 10 years on, and you're doing all these projects, many of them simultaneously, do you have the amount of money that you need or would want to do everything that you need to do? At least are you doing more than just keeping up with infrastructure like Beck Lane as it would normally come to be replaced? In other words, can we get ahead enough that we can not only replace things, but be and not only do things like the CSO that have been mandated by federal authorities, but do things that the city says, hey, this is our idea. We want to do this. Do you have that sort of ability?
We're very blessed here because, again, I think of the way that we work together and the dynamics of this area, that we're a growing community and that allows for growing resources. But I do want to make just a couple points that a lot of the projects we just discussed that deal with utility, those are rate driven, right? So we have water and sewer rates. So that's fee based. I mean, we raise water rates, we raise sewer rates to pay for those projects. So that's kind of outside that tax base, that tax portion of it, the civil city. This is a utility. But then we do use some other TIF dollars to help build infrastructure too, to help attract businesses or get water and sewer lines to where businesses need to locate, or when we create shovel ready gold level industrial parks, which have proved to be very successful for our community in bringing in new business, new assessed valuation, and therefore additional funding. So, you know, we are able to do the baseball stadium. We are able to do the new slides that you've seen at the park. We're getting ready to bring back the carousel and the power paddle boats, and we're building the penguin exhibit. So we're very blessed here, but we're still one of the fastest growing areas in Indiana and one of the 100 fastest growing metros in the United States. Where it's still a little tough, the area that's still a little tough is road funding and getting the money to do all the road projects and the curbing, you know, the gas tax that passed and things. You and I have talked about that in the past. That money from that gets phased into municipalities over a 5-year period. So we've not got all of our funds for that yet. But I think once that kicks in, I think we're overall doing very well here.
On to some other things. We've done some reporting about historic preservation this year. Lafayette, of course, very active in that area, very attentive to it. We have focused mostly on the downtown area. You were talking a little earlier about development and interest in that area in redeveloping some of those spaces. That got me thinking about, you know, the fact that a lot of that has been kind of a little bit south of Main Street or Ferry Street in downtown. And so I started thinking about the North End, and I thought back to a conversation you and I had on the show a couple of years ago where we had a big church in the community that was investing heavily in building a building, a community center in the North End. And you said at the time that you thought that might become somewhat more common, where you've got private entities that have some money to spend becoming investors and helping to be the revitalizing entities in those areas. And I wanted to touch back on that with you specifically about the North End of town. Has that continued to happen? Have you had people interested, not just in the downtown, but in maybe parts of the North End where you've got, you know, some really great bones of houses that in a lot of cases could probably use some TLC. Have you continued to see that, or has there been a lull in it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've continued to see it at a reasonable pace. I mean, the challenge that we have is, you know, downtown, and as you said, you know, going to the south, there's been some new development, and Habitat for Humanity in the Wabash neighborhood has done a fantastic job. If you go down to the Wabash neighborhood now, it, you know, with Wabash walls, the new murals, the homes that are being refurbished, it looks great. And those neighbors have really bought in, and that's moving along very nicely. Centennial neighborhood, you know, north of downtown there, has done very well. Those neighbors have worked with the city and private developers, and as you know, created the Centennial Neighborhood Investment Group that even invested some of their own money. Centennial townhomes are a huge success. We've got two other homes that are being worked on right now, working with John Teeble, the gentleman that did the Centennial neighborhood homes. And then, you know, you try to push out into the historic Jeff, and you get down into the Lincoln neighborhood where the Faith Development Corporation built the Hartford Hub. And they've been working on houses down there and Habitat. And then even in the deeper north end, Habitat and Faith has been doing it. So it's moving. And then there's been a lot of more private investment because the housing market's tight and people are actually buying more homes in those areas to actually live. The biggest challenge that we have is, you know, we use home funds and CDBG to help those organizations. They also raise private dollars to do it. But it still boils down to right now is finding people, and when you need construction people to help put in some of the work, the foundations and different things like that, that's actually slowed that down just a little bit because we could use another group, quite frankly. If we had even another group, private or church or anybody that could get certified as a community development organization that was really good at, you know, rehabbing, refurbishing homes and things like that.
What does that take, by the way? What does that certification take?
It's a whole process, and you have to go through the city with it and the Lafayette Housing Authority, who administers our CDBG and home funds. It has to go to HUD all the way to Washington. It has to be approved and come all the way back. It's just really challenging to find smaller companies, smaller that does home remodeling and things like that. They are so busy that it's, you know, to take, because those our jobs don't pay quite the same, to find, you know, folks to do that. But yes, I can tell you with all certainty, it's continuing. Obviously, we'd always like it to go even faster, but we're doing quality work. And like I said, I go down by the Hartford Hub. It's making a huge difference in the lives and the people in that neighborhood. Take a drive to Wabash Avenue. Look at some of the murals and some of the homes that are being worked on and the pride people that are taking. We're getting there. It's a long process, but we're getting there.
Is there ever an opportunity for a city to go to some of its more moneyed individuals, single benefactor people or families, and say, hey, look, we would really appreciate it if you would invest back in this neighborhood where we could use some help. We could use some capital to get things started. Is that the kind of conversation that ever happens?
Oh, they absolutely happen. And I have to be a little bit careful. I don't know if they'd want their names on the radio and stuff, but you know, we have people that do that all the time. We have people that sponsor Habitat houses. We, as you know, and this is very public, I mean, Mr. Schumann and the Schumann Family Foundation donated $5 million to help make the North End Community Center viable. And they donate a lot of money to Habitat, as do other individuals. So we actually do have a lot of private individuals that help those organizations. And a lot of the money, like you said, from Faith, the city gave about $150,000 and a lot to help with the Hartford Hub. The rest of that money they raise from private individuals. So there's a lot of private money in the stuff that we're doing, actually.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. It seems that we've run out, but as always seems to happen, I have more stuff to ask you next month.
Oh, that's good.
So we'll do it then.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Tune in next week for our conversation with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes at this same time. Send emails to any of our four mayors. ask@wbaa.org is the address. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.